Imagine you're a social worker. You have like this highly specialized training to help a family in crisis, but instead of being out in the community, you're trapped behind a desk, just drowning in forms.
Yeah, triplicate forms usually.
Right. And that is the exact reality when a province is staring down more than 42,000 active foster care cases. So today, we're doing a deep dive into the Western Cape Department of Social Development's latest annual report.
And our mission today is really to figure out how a government safety net actually holds together, or, even innovates, when it's just crushed under the weight of severe poverty, high unemployment, and rising gender-based violence.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because trying to manage a crisis of this scale with paper files is basically like hiring a world-class surgeon, but forcing them to spend 80% of their day filling out hospital billing forms by hand.
Exactly. I mean, that structural bottleneck is the core issue here. The demand for social services is just relentless.
Yeah, it never stops.
No, it doesn't. But a government can't just magically manufacture thousands of new social workers overnight to meet that surging demand. So you have to radically change how the existing ones actually work.
Right, so the strategy was to completely overhaul the administrative burden. In April 2024, the department rolled out this system called SWIMS, which is the Social Work Integrated Management
Just
System.
a huge structural shift.
It really is. It basically digitized the case files for 1,062 social workers across the province, and they also sent three new mobile offices out to remote areas.
Places like the Central Karoo.
Yeah, exactly. To physically reach 447 clients who couldn't easily get to a town. But look, I do have to push back here a bit. We are talking about nearly 43,000 vulnerable kids in the foster system alone. Is giving a social worker an iPad just like a digital band-aid on a massive bleeding wound?
Well, what's fascinating here is the direct link between data management and human survival. When we talk about statutory child protection, which is the government's strict legal mandate to physically intervene, time is the only metric that matters.
Because you're racing against the clock to protect a child in danger.
Exactly. Before SWIMS, a worker might spend 3 days a week just processing intake forms. But digitizing that process automates the reporting. It literally reclaims days of their week.
Sure, but an app itself doesn't pull a kid out of a dangerous home.
No, of course not. But it frees up the trained professional who does. It moves them from the filing cabinet to the front door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that reclaimed time is the actual mechanism that allows for a proactive home visit instead of, a tragic missed warning sign.
I get that. But even if every social worker gets those hours back, there simply aren't enough of them to cover every single neighborhood. Which brings us to how the department is activating the public.
Right, the grassroots approach.
Yeah, they launched a gender-based violence ambassador program, training 207 community volunteers. And last year, over 24,000 victims accessed formal psychosocial services, meaning they received actual mental and emotional trauma counseling.
This is a massive shift in tactics. Instead of waiting for victims to find their way to a government building, they're embedding the intervention directly in the community.
Right, because these ambassadors are like neighbors, local shop owners.
Community leaders, yeah. They are trained to recognize the early signs of abuse, safely intervene, and securely guide victims right into that formal counseling network.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. They're applying a similar logic to funding by tapping directly into private enterprise. They set up the Cape Care Fund to match NPOs with private donors.
Which is huge for sustainability.
Definitely. But beyond just moving money around, they've partnered with a private training college in George called Africa Skills. They are providing direct bursaries and job training to youth living in the Otaniqua Care Center.
It's a very deliberate attempt to interrupt the generational loop of crime and poverty. You're handing these kids an actual economic exit strategy.
Which makes sense. But I mean, you can't solve everything with bursaries and volunteers,
Yeah.
right?
No, you can't. Building up community resilience fills gaps, but you also need a mechanism to forcefully stop exploitation when it happens.
Right, the hard enforcement side of the safety net. The report highlights this major legal fight, High Court Case 1997-2022. The department basically went to court to immediately shut down a substance treatment center that was operating illegally.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the mechanism of that ruling is incredibly critical. Prior to this, if the department found a predatory rehab facility, maybe one abusing patients or extorting families, there was a dangerous gap in the actual legislation.
Like they didn't have the power to just close them down.
Exactly. Waiting for Parliament to draft new laws to handle that specific issue can take years.
So they just bypassed the legislative waiting room and went straight to a judge.
Precisely. Securing that high court order created an immediate legal precedent. It gave the state the legal teeth it needed right then and there to lock the doors of predatory facilities.
Wow. So they could protect vulnerable users from immediate harm without waiting for a new law.
Exactly. It's a huge win for proactive enforcement.
So what does this all mean for you? Ultimately, the strength of any society is measured by the floor it builds under its most vulnerable citizens.
It really is.
The models being tested here, digitizing the admin work to get social workers into the field, training grassroots neighbors to spot abuse, and forging court precedents to shut down bad actors, they serve as a very real blueprint.
A blueprint for how modern, cash-strapped safety nets have to operate worldwide. It reflects a stark reality. You know, the traditional model of the government doing absolutely everything on its own simply doesn't mathematically work anymore.
Which leaves a rather heavy question on the table. If a government is increasingly forced to rely on unpaid community volunteers and private sector donors to keep its social safety net from collapsing, where exactly does the state's responsibility end and society's begin?